and good morning on a fairly chilly morning for Saturday of Sundance. It's Sundance Reel on the weekend, and I'm your host, Rick Bruff, and with me, as always, an old traditional co-host here on Saturday morning, David Darcy, critic and journalist, or sometimes international man of mystery. Good morning, David.
The mysteries are not so deep to explore.
Yes, but I hear there's no mystery that one of your favorite films at the festival, maybe the favorite film. I don't know. It's is it in the spotlight category called Collective?
Right. I saw this film in Toronto, and I was shocked by it. And I said, wow, I hope this comes to the United States and has been bought for release by Magnolia Films. We have the director, Alexander Nana, with us. And when I saw the title Collective, I thought, oh, God, another Romanian film exploring the communist past, because that's what the title suggests. So can you correct what my preconceptions were?
Yeah, so good morning. It's not about a collective. It's not about a kibbutz or a communist collective. We had in 2015, we had a big nightclub fire that broke out during a concert in a club that was called Collective. As the title, you know, we chose the title because in a way it also describes the film's theme and purpose, that we understand that we are all in it together in a way when it comes to government corruption, and more so in the healthcare system where our lives are in danger.
Right. Well, we have problems with that too here, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
So for the sake of our listeners who haven't seen this film yet, and I urge them to see it, there's a fire in the nightclub. I may not remember the number correctly. 27 deaths, is that?
Yes,
that right?
27.
Immediately
died on spot. Yeah.
But then many people had severe burns, and it turns out that the healthcare system that they expected would be able to take care of them left them, to many of those people, to die miserably. Can you explain what happened?
Yeah, so after the fire, there were around 180 severely injured youngsters, because it was a concert where mostly youngsters were there. And so the state apparatus, so to say, said to a really grieving country, it was a national trauma, that they can take care of everybody, they will take care of everybody, and they are in the best hands, and the Romanian healthcare system is as good as the German healthcare system. What it didn't say was that Romania had no capacity at all to treat severe burn patients. Severe burn patients have to be treated in burn units, because the biggest danger are infections, because when you don't have a skin anymore, you get infected, you die. And so, although everybody wanted to fly the patients out to other countries to burn units, they said they didn't allow it and said they can take care of it. If parents organized by themselves to get their kids out, they said, like, if you move your kid, you will kill him, which is a big lie, because you can transport a burn patient if you stabilize him 24 hours after the accident.
Right, and these patients ended up not dying during transport. They ended up just dying from inattention.
Yeah, so they got all infected, and the government got panicked at a certain point, and only after 1 week allowed them to be transferred to other European countries. And, you know, after having this mass manipulation, which is very comparable to Chernobyl in a way, for sure, different numbers, different outcome, but the mechanism is just the same. So what they did, they let them go finally, but they erased from their files the fact that they were infected. So the hospitals where they arrived took them off the antibiotics because they didn't know why they are on the toughest antibiotics if they don't have infections yet. And so many of them died because of that.
Okay, this is horrific. And I'm not the first person to say that this is kind of a reminder of The Third Man, where children die when they don't have the proper doses of the medicine that they're supposed to be given. You follow journalists who take this on. In a country reputed for corruption,
yep.
What's qualitatively different about this?
What, those to our story? Or?
Yeah, to your story, yeah.
So, I mean, the film follows then this team of investigative journalists that follow this track of infections, and because whistleblowers come in that tell them that, you know, the infections are outrageously high in Romanian hospitals, and then another whistleblower tells them that the company that is producing the disinfectant that is used in most or in all Romanian state hospitals, and that company is diluting the disinfectants. So basically it's just, you know, more like plain water. For us it was just, you know, we approached the journalists. We knew that they were investigating the healthcare system, and then we go with them and really see in real time how their investigation unfolds. And as in The Third Man, I don't know if I can spoil the story now, but there's such a big parallel. Even the Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung, the big German newspaper, wrote during we were filming, and then this a piece came out where they compare it to The Third Man and compare the CEO of Hexi Pharma, this company that was diluting disinfectants, to Harry Lime in The Third Man.
Okay.
And then they said, and Harry Lime in the end kills himself.
Yeah. Right. Harry Lime is the character played by Orson Welles in The Third Man.
Yeah.
Rick.
One of the interesting facets of the story is that scandals were pursued by a sports newspaper or magazine, which is a little strange for the U.S. I don't know about Romania, but explain how they got involved in this.
Yeah, so it's a sports gazette, which is called Gazeta Sportului in Romania, and it's actually the oldest paper in Romania. It's a sports paper, and the journalists that investigate the case are actually sports journalists, but they have a long track record of investigations. They only investigated until then. They investigated in the sports world, so they became quite famous and are known for their good investigations. So they brought down, for example, two sports ministers because of corruption, and that had to go to jail afterwards. So they were known for investigations. But after the fire, because it was a national tragedy, because it was this outrageously an insane mass manipulation of a whole nation, they felt the duty that they should investigate now, because, you know, there are investigative journalists, but they are much younger. There's a young generation that's coming now. They are good, but they are not yet that strong as them.
Mm-hmm. Was the experience of watching this film takes you from one revelation to the next, to the exposure of one person, to the exposure of another person? Is it going too far to think of the metaphor of the infection of a political organism as something that's running parallel to the metaphor of this infection that's out of control when it's not treated in the film after the fire?
No, not at all. It is even, I think it's the most accurate symbol for it, because multi-resistant infections, as we know, become multi-resistant because, you know, if you treat them with disinfectants that are not good enough, they will learn from it. They would become stronger. If you treat them with antibiotics that do not kill them, they will become stronger. And then disinfections also eat up each other to absorb the DNA of the other infection and become even stronger. And I think it's a very good metaphor for a system and for corruption in a state system, and how it pursues. If we don't manage to eradicate it, it will only grow, you know. And when populists come into power, they will bring in incompetent people, because they will serve them no matter what, because they know they would never have gotten that positions from anybody else.
Right. We are familiar with this. in the United States. Now, your description of the infection was eloquent. I don't think it'll fit on a movie poster. You're opening this film in February, next month, right, in Romania.
Yes.
Is there enough outrage over these events that the public is aware of them and you think will come to see the film? Or does it take a certain amount of explanation to go from the material in the film to a pitch for a commercially released movie?
No, it's still, I mean, it's, as I said, it was a national trauma and it's still very present in the society. So collective, it still triggers so much anger and emotion, because it was a point where everybody realized it could have been my kids, it could have been me, you know, being killed by this corrupt system. And so I don't know in terms of numbers, but we're going to open in 30 cities. For now, the reactions are quite good for the campaign we are making. And previews, for example, get sold in 2 hours in several cinemas. So we expect it to be, you know, widely received and to start discussions in the society about each individual's role in participating in democracy and, you know, not looking away when we see fraud, because it's a country that is quite infected by corruption, which persists because people are not, you know, are not as courageous as, let's say, the whistleblowers we see in the film.
Yeah. Your film ends with the results of a national election, and I won't give away the results, but during that national election and the campaign there, was the health care the major issue dominating that election, or were there other issues going on?
Oh, that election campaign that was then won by the Social Democrats, yeah, they build it up on attacking the, you know, we had a technocrat government for 1 year. So they kept attacking actually the that government because of the healthcare policies they did. And they just had a big campaign lying that they will build, I don't know, 8 big hospitals in the country and everything. So nothing happened. That was 4 years ago. Nothing happened. It was just a very populistic propaganda. And it worked.
You know, in cases like this where you have a major industry, the healthcare industry, put in question, you have pressure from politicians, you have pressure from corporate lobbies, you have all kinds of pressure against individual journalists. If that doesn't work, they go to the editor of the newspaper or they go to the whoever's producing your film, and they then might go to the, you know, to a corporate level of ownership and all that. Was there, there must have been pressure at some point against you as well making the film, or was there?
Not really.
Or did you have money from outside Romania also helping you make the film?
Yeah, it's a co-production between Romania, Luxembourg and HBO Europe. So we had, like in Europe, we partly finance our films through the state fund, so the cinema fund, right, which gives you something like a credit. You can take a credit that you have to pay back. And we had that from Romania and Luxembourg. And so the pressure, they can't really put a pressure on it, but the reason for it is more that they don't really, I think they never took us seriously. They don't think that the documentary is something dangerous. They think in other terms. They think in terms of television stations, of whole media outlets that they fight with, but not a documentary. They never took us too seriously. But nevertheless, I know that we were, you know, my phone was taped and I know that we were surveilled. I know they knew about our activity. So that means that during production, what we also did, we were very vigilant. And so every day, for example, we would spread the footage into 3 different locations and then now and then bring it out of the country. So we were very well organized, so that whatever happened, I expected my office to be broken in every night to get the footage. But we were prepared for everything, so we knew what to do.
So that sounds like a very effective campaign to get the word out. Has any of this, has there been any improvement in healthcare in Romania as a result of the information, the investigation that was done by these journalists that you brought out in the film? The film has. Did the film premiere at a festival in Romania already?
No.
So it hasn't been shown at all?
No. We decided not to do it. Mm-hmm. And we only showed it in international festivals. And in Romania, we had for sure screenings with the victims of the fire and the victims' families. But we decided to only show it publicly once we release it.
Okay. Well, if I'm in Romania and I have some kind of accident or I need a blood transfusion, should I be more comfortable going into a hospital now than I might have been 3 or 4 years ago?
No, I don't think so. But the basic things, let's say they work. It becomes more complicated when you have complicated surgeries. But one has to understand that the burn patient is the most, maybe one of the most complicated patient out there to be treated. It's very delicate to treat a burn patient and, you know, protect him from getting infected. And
so some people must have brought this up already. This is so dramatic. The characters are compelling. This is raw material for a remake, for a fictional remake. Mm-hmm. Have you been approached about that?
There were discussions about it because, yeah, it's certainly the universal core of the story. More so after we screened it in so different countries and we saw that the reaction is as strong as everywhere, like even in our screenings we did in Romania. I can't say that the reaction in Romania is stronger than outside of Romania. So the film definitely has such a universal core that talks in a way to the fears we live with since 2016 around the globe, when we had this turning point and populist, quite incompetent governments took over. So yeah, there is something strong for a remake, but we'll have to see. I mean, we'll start thinking about it.
Yeah. Also, you know, a new government, say, you know, if you're relying on state funds, and some of the state funds are Romanian, a new government could come in and say, well, okay, we don't want to see any more collectives. We, you know, let's reduce the amount of subsidy to cinema, and particularly to investigative documentaries, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is that a threat?
Not really, because it's still a European Union. It's not,
well, for now, until tomorrow.
For now, that's true. It's true. You never know how somebody comes into power and says, like, we're going to have a raw exit now. but the film fund is still independent. The commissions that choose the projects are still made of professionals from the film industry that are independent. And so I don't expect that. For sure, there can be always pressure. And the money that goes into the film fund, it's not directly money from the state's budget. It's money that is collected directly for the film fund. So, you know, from the porn industry. Yes, for example, from the porn industry, there's a tax.
Tell us. I mean, you're in Utah. Remember?
Yeah.
Tell our listeners about that.
So, and then from the casinos and from.
So the sin taxes. Can we call them that?
Yeah, in a way, but also from. Commercial companies that do commercial, they have to pay a certain percentage to the film fund.
Well, based on what we've seen in this film, commercial companies are committing plenty of their own sins, mm-hmm. if we wanted to look at it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, well, we need to wrap up here, but we'll discuss porn taxes and sin taxes later on. Alexander, your film already has premiered yesterday at the Temple Theater near Park City. And
how was the screening?
Yeah.
Very good. I loved it. Also, the quality of the screening is great here, and the audience is just marvelous.
Okay. And good. You're down today in Salt Lake, and then returning to Park City Wednesday the 29th at the Redstone Cinema, and you wrap up again with another Saturday screening at the Redstone Cinema, and kicking off with, it's not easy to impress David Darcy, so when a film does that, come on. Documentary Collective and the director Alexander Nanal, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Tune in and find out about some of the unknown and talented independent filmmakers from around the world. Join us for the Sundance Reel each weekday morning between 9 and 10. We'll highlight some of the most intriguing films being presented at this year's Sundance Film Festival. That's the Sundance Reel weekday mornings from 9 to 10 through January 31st, right here on KPCW or online, kpcw.org.
The Sundance Reel is brought to you in part by Sundance Institute, presenting the 2020 Sundance Film Festival from January 23rd through February 2nd. And Acura, proud 10-year sponsor of the festival and supporter of independent film and music. Learn more at Acura.com.